go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The hour is finally here. My three favorite hours of the day. 3 hours of conversation. 3 hours of information. 3 hours of brotherhood, sisterhood, camaraderie. 3 hours on the horn. I'm Bob, your wonderful you. Welcome, newbies. Always welcome, newbies. Stick around and become an old friend. It's kind of a gray evening here in the hills and hollers of what's left of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. An icy mix of snow and sleet and rain and slop has descended upon the mountains. It has its own beauty. It really does. I had to run down the road right before the program started. And it was all socked in and gray. Couldn't see the town from the top of the hill. It's about 35 degrees outside. Going to get colder. There'll be a hard freeze tonight. Kids didn't go to school today. But I reckon we'll be all right. It's a tough evening, though. It really is. I mean, I know what's going on out in the wider world, but... okay, we've already long ago established that I'm a movie junkie. Yeah, if I like a movie, it just gets on me like a cheap suit. One of those movies that I love, and which would be appropriate to mention given the time of year and the impending date, one of those movies that I love is a Bill Murray film called Groundhog Day. And if you know the film, you know it concerns a vain, self-interested, self-absorbed weatherman who gets sort of stuck in a time loop where he has to live the same day over and over and over and over again in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Every day begins the same, every day ends the same, only the stuff in the middle is different. And you know there's a subplot in the film where the self-absorbed, callous Bill Murray character begins to be concerned about people other than himself, and one of those is an old fella who lives on the streets. And as the movie goes along, you watch him as he tries to make a difference in the old man's life. Well, there was no Bill Murray character, and it wasn't Groundhog Day in Bay City, Michigan. No, in Bay City, Michigan, the Bushmerican economic miracle chugs along. There wasn't any bailout money for Marvin Schur of Bay City, Michigan. There wasn't any stimulus for Marvin Schur of Bay City, Michigan, who lived in a little yellow frame house that looks like so many other frame houses, I'm sure, in Bay City, Michigan or anywhere else in America. 93 years old, Marvin Shure. Veteran of the Second World War. Marvin Shure, having survived either the Japanese Empire, the Italian fascists, or the Nazis, Marvin Shure could not survive American capitalism and the free market. Marvin Shure froze to death a couple of weeks back. He wasn't out on the street like the old man in Groundhog Day. He was in his own home. In the home that he had bought and paid for with the working years of his life. And he froze to death. The temperature inside the home of Marvin Shure, 93 years old, of Bay City, Michigan, when officials finally went in and found his frozen corpse, was below freezing. For the international audience, that's below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. For us playing here at home, that's below zero Celsius. Bay City Electric Light and Power was the local utility with whom Marvin Shure did business. Bay City Electric Light and Power wasn't very fond of Marvin Shure just now, 93 years old, Second World War veteran. Nope. Because Marvin Shure owed what the folks at Yahoo claim, because they write the headlines, you know. This is an Associated Press story that Yahoo picked up. 93-year-old froze to death, owed big utility bill. He owed, the AP story notes, and I quote, more than $1,000 in unpaid electric bills. An autopsy was performed on Marvin Shure. Kanu Virani, the Oakland County Deputy Chief Medical Examiner, said Marvin Shure's death was a slow and painful one. Well, not near as slow and painful as he was about getting that $1,000 that he owed to the power company. That's slow and painful when these deadbeats, and we do mean dead, won't pony up and pay what they owe so that we can have freedom and capitalism in Merca. What have we become? A simple question. What have we become? It is literally the dead of winter. And we can't seem to make sure that a 93-year-old veteran of the Second World War doesn't freeze to death. Sure, there's responsibility to go around. It wasn't like he was the only house in the middle of the Great North Woods. He lived in a neighborhood, Marvin Shure did. But it is Michigan. And Michigan is, by God, harder hit than virtually, well, than any other state in the Union by the Bush economic miracle. And I don't know anything about his neighbors, Marvin Shure's neighbors. But I do know for a fact that the Bay City Electric Light and Power Company sent a functionary around, a working guy. And they and the working guy installed something. It's a fuse-like device on Marvin Shore's electric meter. And when a 93-year-old man has consumed more power than Bay City Electric Light and Power Company thinks he needs or is willing to let him have, you know, on credit, the little fuse trips and the old man dies. Die, old man, die. Dance, monkey, dance. There's no information in the story to suggest whether the functionary from Bay City Electric Light and Power Company knew who he was doing what he was doing to. There's no information to suggest who that person was. I would not want to live inside that working guy's brain just now. This is the America that we have to fix. This is the America that is broken almost beyond repair. This is the America that Ronald Reagan gave us. This is the America that George H.W. Bush gave us. This is the America that, yea, verily, George W. Bush gave us. This is an America that lets its elderly die warehoused and alone in nursing homes, because both halves of a couple that are their children or grandchildren are too busy struggling to survive the Bush economic miracle to be able to give care. This is the America where Marvin Shore lives by himself and dies not what I called, but what the medical examiner called a horrible death. Frozen and alone. His home in Bay City, Michigan could just as easily have been the slopes of K2 because it was hypothermia that killed him. The medical examiner said that when you die from hypothermia before, as your system slowly shuts down, that one of the last things you are aware of is the sensation that your hands and your feet are on fire. You ever wonder where humanity came up with the notion of hell? Eternal, tormented, burning? There's one. We will never know the last words of Marvin Shure, 93 years old, veteran of the Second World War. Might they have been, "I'm burning, burning"? We don't know. I don't know enough yet about Marvin Shure to know where he served in the Second World War. But this is that brutal time of year when, in 1944 and into early 1945, the German counterattack that we commonly refer to as the Battle of the Bulge took place. This is roughly the same time that a brutal winter had set in on the European continent. And young American and British, French, Polish men froze in bitter cold. Some of that is recounted in Kurt Vonnegut's brilliant work, Slaughterhouse-Five. But we don't know if that was something that Marvin Shure endured. All we know is that we must add Marvin Shure's name to that growing list of people who could not survive, of people who survived the Nazis and the Japanese, of people who survived the Great Depression, of people who gave their entire lives to this nation, to its economy, to its war machine, gave what Abraham Lincoln called the last full measure of devotion, and survived it all, but could not survive George W. Bush and the economic policies that allow power companies to turn off the electricity for all intents and purposes in the dead of winter. How many more of these people there are, we do not know. It remains to be seen. But we do know that there was one, Marvin Shure, who died frozen and alone in his home in Bay City, Michigan, sometime before January the 17th, 2009. Where is the head boss man of Bay City Power and Electric Light Company? What are the ex post facto justifications offered for allowing an old man to freeze in the most brutal part of winter? What would be the words from the lineman who went to the home and installed the implement of death? On this man's electric meter. There is a quote in the story. George Powells Jr. discovered Mr. Shure's body. He said his furnace was not running. The insides of his windows were full of ice the morning we found him. Bay City manager Robert Bellaman said that limiter goes on a house for 10 days and then they shut off power entirely if the homeowner hasn't paid utility bills or arranged to do so. Stunning, isn't it? Bellaman said Bay City Electric Light and Power's policies will be reviewed. But I don't believe the city did anything wrong. And then Bellaman said this. Sit down. I've said this before, and some of my colleagues have said this. Neighbors need to keep an eye on neighbors. When they think there's something wrong, they should contact the appropriate agency or city department. Well, damn you, Mr. Bellaman. The something wrong was the fact that your stinking power company cut the power off to a 93-year-old World War II veteran. What is calling the city going to do about that? I don't think we did anything wrong. Sure had no children. And he had been without his wife several years ago, who died several years ago. What a sad, sad, pathetic story. What a sad and miserable story of life in Bushmerica. And you want to add insult to injury? You know how the fiends of coal, the Fockers, as we call them, you know how the fiends of coal run around with these stickers that say, coal, it keeps the lights on. Guess what? Bay City Electric Light and Power is connected directly to the rape and destruction of Appalachia. Yep. Mountain removal coal keeps the lights on in Bay City, Michigan. And the heat, too. Unless, of course, you're a 93-year-old veteran of the Second World War by the name of Marvin Shure. Then, well, coal doesn't keep the lights on so well. Few people will note the passing of Marvin Shure. That's what makes, I think, so important what we do here at the Horn. Because you will note the passing of Marvin Shure, and though you did not know him, you will grieve him. Though you did not know him, you will miss him, for you will know that he is missed. And you will know that he died, sacrificed on the altar of business efficiency. I don't believe that we did anything wrong here. It was freezing cold outside. It was killing cold outside. This is, after all, a city located on Saginaw Bay in central Michigan. But cutting an old man's power off in the dead of winter, I don't think we did anything wrong. If there is any justice, if there's such a thing as ghosts, Marvin Shure will visit Mr. Bellaman when it's Mr. Bellaman's time to go. This isn't open brutality. This is casual brutality. This is the casual brutality of a country that has become obsessed with its rich and utterly unconcerned with its poor. And this is a story that will be repeated. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, hey, it's Sandra.
Sandra, what's up?
What was the name of that utility company?
Bay City Electric Light and Power.
Yeah, you know, I really do think I'm going to have to call the customer service for that place. It's called Bay what?
Bay City Electric Light and Power.
And this is in...
Bay City, Michigan.
Oh, my God. Now, listen. What in the world? Now, anybody who can craft any kind of policy could figure out that, oh, wait, you know, we're in a recession. It's the dead of winter. How about we just leave all the power on until at least the spring? You know what I'm saying? I mean, just on the strength of it.
Well, see, we used to have these things called public service commissions that did this thing called regulating the power company.
Yeah, no, exactly. That was my next comment. I'm like, you know, this is it's so brutal. I was listening to you, you know, and it's just sort of like, this is unbelievable, this story. And this poor man served this country. You know, it's just a nightmare. That story just epitomizes the state of this country to me.
It does, Sandra, and that's why I said this man was sacrificed. He was sacrificed for deregulation.
No, and it's utterly absurd that we have to live somewhere where utilities are, you know, only profit centers to the exclusion of everything.
And what's more, this appears to be a public utility that's run by the city of Bay City, Michigan.
Okay, well,
I mean, it's not supposed to be for profit.
Unbelievable. I read an article months ago talking about the percentage of people in Michigan that would have their power cut off. You know, this is something that's been ongoing in Michigan.
And it's only going to get worse because Michigan is bad sick.
Oh, no. I mean, people are desperate. That's the impression I get.
And I have been kindly provided with information by our chat room moderator, Sue, ELO. Bay City Electric Light and Power. Their address is 900 South Water Street, Bay City, Michigan, 48708. They can be reached by phone at area code 989-894-8350.
Yeah, okay, because, I'm just going to have to make a call just to voice my...
Well, it's always the stuff, Sandra, it's always the stuff that comes after that just makes me just bash my head into a wall. Here's this manager, Bellaman, who says, well, he didn't do anything wrong. And then he has the nerve to call out the neighbors?
No, it's absurd. I mean, there is no community at all.
That's
not
going
to fall on that.
Yeah, that's banality of evil business that Hannah Arendt was talking about.
That's right. That's exactly what she was talking about. Because that MF-er, please, I would just like to think that a groundswell of, you know, hate calls or whatever will make some sort of impact. And I suggest anyone who's listening to give them a little courtesy call. Just as a person living in this country, you know, this cannot be the norm. It's sick. This country is sick.
What's that old saying, Sandra, that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link? And then there was somebody out there who said famously that the true measure of the worth of a country is in how it. Oh, wait, I think that was Samuel Johnson. Yeah, the worth of a country is best disclosed by the way it treats its poorest citizens.
No, and you know someone who lived to be in their 90s in this country right now contribute mightily. Let's be honest, that's disgusting. I'm looking at
the picture here, Sandra. It's a little square yellow, the yellow frame house. You know, just the yellow wood frame house. Little. And there's snow all over the place, and, you know, it occurs to me to note the neighbor did find the guy, okay? George Powell's Jr. found Mr. Schur, and he found him on the 17th, and he was frozen to death, and the house was 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
But when
you got a 93-year-old neighbor and there's as much snow on the ground as what I see in this photograph, you feel better when you don't see them in this weather.
That, but I mean, it's so indicative of where this country is at, because I know when I was growing up, I actually remember checking on a few older people in the neighborhood, you know, just because that's what you did if you were a young person, at least in my neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? You kept tab on who was who, especially the people who were on their own.
Sure.
And that's just how it was back then. I didn't give it two thoughts, but obviously that's not the situation we're living in now. I'm appalled. I mean, I'm not blaming the neighbors, but...
Well, no, because there's another timing issue here, too, Sandra. This limiter thingy, this little fuse gizmo that clicks over if you use too much electricity before they cut you off entirely, It was installed on Mr. Schur's meter on January the 13th. That meant that he had 10 days.
Okay.
He was dead by the 17th.
So that thing didn't work.
Well, that or the threshold is set so low that if you do anything more than turn on a light.
Right, right. Okay, I see what you're saying. So if the man was using energy to keep, say, warm, then it went over the limit and it shut right off, huh?
Yeah.
Listen, I'm just sort of speechless.
Bellaman said he didn't know if anyone had made personal contact with Schur to explain how the device worked.
Well, you know what? Listen, that guy, that's their idea of a spokesperson? Jesus. Wow.
Yeah. But I'm glad you do see what I'm getting at here, Sandra, that this is a larger issue. This isn't just Bay City, Michigan. I had a story 4 years ago when I was still doing terrestrial radio in Beckley that made people really, really mad, especially the gas company. A woman had just given birth to a little son, and I don't want to be cruel, but she wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, okay?
Okay.
She was profoundly challenged.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the hospital let her come home, and CPS, Child Protective Services, had been watching the case, and they let her bring the baby home. Meanwhile, the gas company, knowing that there was a newborn in the house, cut the gas off. And as it developed, Child Protective Services was raked over the coals. I think a few heads rolled. But never a daggum word was said to the gas company.
All these stories are right there with that. Remember that old man that got hit by a car and people just drove by him?
Yeah.
Remember, I mean, it's the same sort of mentality. And you can, and this is worse because you can point to an entity that's responsible for this. And we have to hear them blame neighbors? Please, lock that fool up, you know?
Well, this thing has roots. It has tentacles. This goes back. Do you remember when the Enron fiends were caught on tape giggling about how they were jacking up Granny's power bill in California and going to get her retirement?
What, the smartest guys in the room, that movie?
Yeah, there you go.
Listen, you know, these people take profit everywhere. I mean, will there ever come a time when people will come first? I know it's a cliche, but I am just so appalled by this story and the sadness I feel for this poor old man who just froze to death, which is a hideous way to go.
Yeah, it is, but the question is, what the hell is wrong with this country? Because you know, you and I both know that there are days, thousands of hours every day of right wingers out there talking about the miracle of the free market. Well, the free market killed this man.
Yeah, please.
Because see, that's the other trick. This was a public utility. This was Bay City Electric Power and Light.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they're not supposed to be for profit, but they are still tied into the profit stream that starts here in Appalachia with for-profit destruction of our homes and gets on a coal train and winds up in Bay City, Michigan. And you know what? They don't get the non-profit per ton price for this coal. They pay market value.
Right. No, I mean, the whole thing just reeks. And I mean, I can just tie it into this whole Gitmo thing. I mean, you know, we treat every, you know, you can look at that, how that poor man died is the same way that powers that be feel it's okay to treat these detainees and on. I mean, the source of it is all so gruesome. And I'm sure there's more people in Michigan. See, that's what I'm afraid of, Bob. I'm sorry. I wonder, I'm not saying this. Loads, but I'm sure there's other people who may be facing shut off or are in the midst of it. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
And I just think a call to that place, you know, might.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be an ass or anything, but where were all these faith-based initiatives?
Oh, please.
You know, them 1,000 points a light. I'm sick of this stuff, Sandra. I am. I, I, you know, there's a million things going on in the world today, but I read this story and I'm like, I said to myself, you know, this has to start the program. Somebody has to remember this man.
No, it's an outrage. No, I will. I definitely am going to call that place. I can't, you know, maybe I'll come up with something coherent to say. I wouldn't call him right now, I'll tell you that.
No.
Because... But I am gonna call, and I think that I'm hoping that other listeners might drop a dime on these people. I mean, it's outrageous. You know, we're all living, you know, we're all in it, you know? I'm sick of people not standing together for anything, you know? It's a joke.
If you can't stand, if you can't stand for a 93-year-old World War II vet, if you can't stand for a baby who's already alive and starving, or freezing, then we're doomed, aren't we?
Well, no, and this is, you know, this ain't in Gaza. It's in Michigan. You understand what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
Like, hello. Fucking right in your backyard.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Ugh. God, no, that's... Anyway, I'm going to let you go. I really wanted to get some way of getting that number. I'm glad the ELO found that out. And, you know, I'm going to be calling tomorrow, and I want everyone else to... So have a good evening.
Oh, one last thing before you go. This past Monday, ELO's letting me know, this past Monday, the Bay City Commission voted to raise electric rates by 3%.
You know, okay. Wow, more information for me.
Yeah, I know, TMI.
Bye.
See you, Sandra. Yeah, that is the Bay City Electric Light and Power Company, 900 South Water Street, Bay City, Michigan, 48708. The phone number there is 989-894-8350. 989-894-8350. Yeah, raising... Well, but, you know, maybe the county commission had to vote to raise those power rates because, you know, the sorry excuses for a member of the human race, like Don Blankenship, hasn't figured out yet that they don't pull U-Hauls behind hearses. See, Don Blankenship isn't rich enough yet. That cretin that runs the Tennessee Valley Authority. $4-5 million a year for a federal job. He's not rich enough yet. And so, you know, bear that in mind. I'm going right back to the phones. This just now rolling in from our buddy Cindy in Washington State, a follow-up to this story. Marvin Scherr's death was preventable, Lansing officials say. Sharon Geyer, director of the Michigan Office of Services to the Aging, called the freezing death of 93-year-old Marvin E. Scherr of Bay City preventable. Art Schupbach of the Bay County Veterans Council said Bay City Electric Light and Power workers just turned their back on him. It made me sick. Now, this leader of this veterans group said, if city officials would have gotten hold of us, we would have taken action and had someone from the Michigan Veterans Trust Fund pay that utility bill. And it was noted that he was one of Michigan's most vulnerable citizens in need. The Michigan Attorney General's office is reviewing his death. A limiter. Can profit not wait until spring? Well, not if Don Blankenship has anything to do with it. See, that's what I'm going right back to the phones, I promise. But I've got to connect the two ends of this string. Because that rate increase in Michigan is tied to greed in Richmond. Avarice in New York and Pennsylvania. That rate increase comes straight from the coal industry and, to an extent, the railroad industry. It comes from here. I take this stuff seriously. What happens in West Virginia, because this is a very forgettable place, isn't it? If it wasn't for the fact that, you know, you listen to this show, you would probably never give West Virginia a second thought. We're barely Americans. Not to you, but in the grand scheme of things, we are. But the chain of events that ended in the horrific, tragic death of Marvin Shore started in a place in West Virginia that used to be beautiful, or a place in Kentucky that used to be beautiful, or a place in eastern Tennessee or western Virginia that was once beautiful, forested hillside, and was turned into a hell of profit-driven avarice. That's why things like the gadget at ilovemountains.org are so important. All I had to do was put in the Bay City, Michigan zip code, and it was immediately laid out for me, all the connections to mountain removal coal. We talk about the true cost of coal. Marvin Shore paid it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
How you doing, man? I tell you, that would never have happened on my block, and I'm not blaming his neighbors, because his poor neighbors are probably so damn busy with their own problems.
Sure. Well, I mean, this thing was, and that's the thing to bear in mind. That's what makes this Bellaman's comment so sickening, Kevin, is that the power company guy put this limiter on the guy, on Mr. Shure's meter on the 13th, and he was dead by the 17th. It's not like the neighbors weren't watching.
Yeah.
And by the time they got to him on the 17th, he was already frozen to death, and there was ice on the inside of the windows.
Well, you know, I quote F. Scott Fitzgerald, the rich think differently than you and I.
Yeah.
And this is how they think. And is humanity, most, if you're not amongst them, you're a liability. If you have no use to them, you're a liability.
Well, exactly. And see, the other thing to bear in mind, look, and I'm not disparaging any of these efforts. Every time we have a law crafted about a missing child or a murdered child, it winds up being, you know, Charlotte's bill or Susie's bill, or you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, the Amber Alert system. Well, you know, is it possible maybe that somebody could introduce a Marvin's Law? Because oddly, I mean, at some point in time, most states have had Public Service Commission rules in place that say you can't cut the power off on an old person in freezing weather. You just can't do it.
Well, the fact of the matter is people over 70 should not even be paying for power.
Well, there you go.
I think they more than paid, and this guy paid. He's a World War II veteran. You know,
yeah.
He shouldn't even be paying for power.
Now, there's...
You know, it's just sad, you know, that we live in a country, so-called wealthy country, and I bet you some a-hole out there is probably, you know, as a result of this poor old man's death, bought himself a new jet.
Well, I'm being reminded by our buddy Kate down on the coast. She says, I've been thinking about this man all day.
So have I, because Guy James and I had a conversation about him. And, you know, and again, this is the way they think. If you're of no use to them, then you're a liability.
Right.
And that's how the, you know, you have to be of use or you have to just stroke their egos at all times. If not, you're a liability. And this poor old man was a liability because he prevented some rich asshole from getting his extra corporate jet.
it's tough to swallow. But you've raised the best of it. Why? You know, we give our seniors many instances a break on their property taxes. Give them. They earned it. Why do they get an electric bill? Is our society, because Kevin, if our society is so destitute and so bereft that we can't cover the power needs of our senior population, turn out the lights for the rest of us.
Well, the thing is, your conservative will say, well, you know, you should have been smart enough to retire to move to Florida.
And burn up.
Yeah.
You know, God almighty. Well, I'm glad that it is getting discussed. I saw in that story that Cindy sent along that someone in Bay City Electric Light and Power said she'd taken about 50 calls at 10 a.m. and had another 35 voicemails from angry people.
I just say people in Bay City who are serviced by these idiots, a two-month-long non-bill payment strike. Everybody in that area, don't pay your bill. They can't cut off the power to everyone.
Now, oddly enough, you know, this is the local power utility. There's another power company called Consumers Energy.
Yeah.
They said they have a policy of not shutting off electricity on residents 65 and older during the winter months from November 1st through March 31st, and that it doesn't use limiters, which is the thing that they put on Mr. Scherr's meter to make sure that he froze to death.
This is just downright.
But this is the downstream, Kevin, from arguments like you know, government isn't a solution. You know what? Regulation works. Public service commissions, properly empowered and properly staffed, work.
Oh yeah, well, you see, they've been bleeding that for the past 30 some odd years because, you know, and I'm writing about this too. I don't want to be pumping my book, but you know, this really gets my craw. Okay. The conservatives have put so much hurdles for someone who, even someone with low skill set, who want to do public service. Okay, because in New York City here, a sanitation worker, on average, they make $65,000 a year, which is livable in New York. You can sustain yourself on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they've put so much hurdles on getting a sanitation job, or someone who takes the garbage. Now, why is it you have to take a test and all these others to work in the parks and sanitation department? Because we had this program in New York called Workfare, where basically they were getting welfare recipients to do slave labor. So what I'm getting at is, you know, yes, our government has been bled and pillaged by conservatives for the past 30 some odd years. You know.
Yeah, without a doubt. And yet, if you bring up this is a failure of government. I can hear it now. Well, that was a city government public utility. Obviously, the free market wouldn't have cut that, blah, blah, blah. But then again, like I said with Sandra, we've got the Enron example, so we know that that's a lie.
Oh, yeah, well, you know what? City governments have been privatized and maligned for the past 30 some odd years. So to me, that's a load of nonsense.
You know, consider the winds in that are on the Great Lakes.
Yeah.
Look at what could be if there were wind farms up there, more of them, massively more of them.
Well, and you see, this is why wind farms and all that are being so vilified, because you know why? Decentralized power really puts people on a certain level of financial independence. And
yeah,
that's one thing that cannot go in the conservative mindset. It's that much area of control.
And of course, for a right winger, Kevin, control is at the heart of all of it.
Exactly.
It's the very soul of authoritarianism. It's that macho daddy government that Tosh was talking about in his email a couple of nights ago.
It's
reminiscent of when you hear a conservative talk. You know, what's that line from Reagan?
Well, the 9 scariest words in the English language are "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
And I think it was Tosh in an email the other day who pointed out if those would have been the 9 9 scariest words in the world to the people aboard that aircraft in the Hudson River,
mm-hmm.
because they were from the government and they were there to help. You know, if I ever hear that again, the first thing out of my mouth is going to be, yeah, Hudson River.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, what is so sad and perverse is that since Reagan, the purchases of private aircraft have risen. Before that, that was an extreme rarity. Now it's like almost commonplace. Guy James talks about the amount of planes that come and go from the private airport.
Oh, the day before, I was talking with the flight attendant on my flight home from D.C. last week, and she said the day before the inauguration, Monday, that they were unable to land and other planes unable to take off because Dulles's airspace was being managed solely and exclusively for private charters, private aircraft, corporate aircraft.
Oh, yeah.
You know, never mind that as much hell as we give the airlines, never mind the fact that they do have timetables to meet. And, you know, the FAA will put out a report regarding their on-time performance. Well, it's kind of hard to blame an airline for not being on time when they can't get on the ground or get off the ground because the CEO Funkenhauser on his Gulfstream 5 has to get back in time for the cocktail hour.
Oh yeah. You know, and I fear my greatest fear with the airline industry is going to become like the railway industry in this country, and that's a nightmare.
Well, it is. You know, I hope.
Other than the Northeast Corridor, I'm afraid.
Well, my congressman Nick Rahal is a. With whom I have a lot of issues, coal being large among them, does apparently have his head in the right place in many instances where transportation is concerned. He's the vice chair of the House Transportation Committee. And I know what he thinks of rail travel because he was pretty much single-handedly responsible for saving a hell of a lot of Amtrak stations the last time through when the Bushies were trying to murder it.
Oh, yeah. Well, why do you think Florida doesn't have a rail system of any? Because it's up.
Yeah, because they got a bunch of Republicans in government.
Well, Jeb. But it's the same what's going on in this country. It really is. And I hope some chickens come home to roost really quick. I really do.
Yeah, they just didn't come home to roost quick enough for Marvin Scherer.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. Kevin, good hearing from you.
Brother. Okay, talk to you.
All right, bye now. Yeah. Bye. Calling from Brooklyn, our buddy Kevin. The sad, everything out of this is sad. But the finger pointing has already begun. Rebecca Ryman, director of the Bay County Division on Aging, said her office has no record of having any contact with Marvin Scherer. She said he wasn't enrolled in any programs like home-delivered meals or other services aimed at helping seniors. She said there are about 20,000 senior citizens in Bay County. We reach about 2,000 to 3,000 of them. Wow, 10 or 13%. There's no way we were going to be able to know about every situation that's out there. And you know what? She's right. Because I'll guarantee you that every single solitary soul working for the Bay County Division on Aging is doing the work of 3 or 4 people because this is, because, you know, after 12 years of Reagan and Bush 1 and 8 years of the other Bush, we created a mindset inside government that says that those are government welfare programs and we don't need them because that's not marking.
because it don't make no profit. And I hate them. I hate the rotten bastards who have turned this country into this, who have broken us on the rack of their insatiable yearning for more of, what did the dim former leader call it? Your money. I wouldn't want to be, again, I wouldn't want to be inside the skull of anybody working for the Bay County Division on Aging. They look, but see, Marvin Schur is, I mean, they work on the front lines. Marvin Schur is one of 17 to 18,000 that they don't reach. And they know it. If they could, they would. If there were adequate protections for our senior population there or anywhere else, the people who work in those areas would move heaven and earth. Because I've known them. I know the dedication. You know, ask horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. Ask him about the people who work in social service agencies, who work on behalf of defenseless children and defenseless older adults. They get in those jobs and they last 3, 4, 5 years before they're completely fried by it. Meanwhile, at the Bay City Electric Light and Power Company, they're stringently repeating to themselves the mantra of "It's not our fault. It's not our fault. It's not our fault. It's not our fault." Quick message to ELO. This from Thunderstone Renee Louise, asking ELO to please post the information about contacting Bay City Electric Light and Power. In the forum, so that other people can access it. If you've got a minute, if you would do that, it would be highly appreciated. You know, there's a reason that the utilities are regulated. Because while it is true that in former times humanity lived without electricity and lived without light and power and heat and so forth, and survived brutal winters that way, we don't. And we deem it a necessity of living. And we don't. And when you live the way we live, you can't live without this stuff. You can't go out in the woods and build yourself some, you know, or an igloo or something because, you know, the land's owned by the timber company or the coal company, you know, they'll roust your ass for being a squatter. But with Katrina, the Republicans said, well, you know, this is because government can't solve problems. And with this, well, it's because, you know, we can't identify every senior citizen. Why not? Why not? You know, we can. We can make sure that no one goes hungry. We can make sure that no one freezes to death, that no one burns up in the height of summer in an unair-conditioned apartment in New York or Chicago or Birmingham, Memphis, Dallas, Tampa. We can do that. But the first key to being able to do that is wanting to do that, deeming it necessary to do that. In other words, reaching a decision that people who have sacrificed their lives on the wheels of the treadmill of capitalism deserve some basic minimum level of humane treatment to the very end of their days. As I said, we got an email in from Kate down on the coast. She said, I've been thinking about this man all day. Somewhere in the news it was noted that there was money clipped to his utility bill on the table.
speculation was that he got confused often and forgot to pay the bill. Kate notes death by exposure is happening all over the globe. Folks are freezing in Russia and Northern Europe, in China and in Alaska. The utility companies around the globe are awash in fraud and profit-making. This isn't only a Bush problem, it is a societal problem all over the planet. Capitalism at its finest. And there is truth in that. There is a great deal of truth in that. But it's, I also feel compelled to note that this is not, it should not be an aspect of capitalism. Capitalism is a business philosophy. It's an economic philosophy. It's not a social philosophy. Granted, it's hustled, because it's a con, its current manifestation is hustled to a credulous public as practically the founding philosophy behind the origination of this nation. But it isn't. And it is a societal problem all over the planet. And it isn't only a Bush problem. But, you know, there were other countries that were in the grips of Bush-like pals. How many years was it that we heard John Fox talk about the lick-spittle John Howard government? You know, John Howard, who had his butt hauled over to Washington so he could get him a Presidential Medal of Freedom, you know, so we could keep that one out of Blair House. Yeah. Oh, there were lots of them. The creepy bastard in Italy. We've got, you know, well, that buddy of Bush's in one of the Istans who boils his political opponents alive. There's a lot of fascist trash to be carried out. And we'll be a while doing it. Cindy says, this is a perfect example of why we need individual power plants on everyone's home. I am all for solar panels. Wind farms kill migrating birds. I'm against them. I'm an avid bird lover. Oh, dear. More birds. Let's get square on this. More birds are killed by house cats and yard cats and feral cats than are killed by all the windmills put together. That's just a fact. And see, that's a luxury I don't have. Because, see, there's not a proposal in West Virginia for everybody to have a windmill and some solar panels on their house and pump it back into the grid. I think that's a beautiful idea. But that's not on the table. That is not an alternative. For instance, where Coal River Mountain is concerned, there are two alternatives. One alternative is to blow the mountain up, turn it into a moonscape, ruin the entire community down there forever, or to leave the mountain intact and, if you must, deep mine it for its coal and have an industrial wind farm on the top of it that will provide 200 jobs in the construction phase and 50 jobs permanently in the maintenance phase just for the wind farm as it's designed. It could grow. It will also provide electricity to some 150,000 to 200 homes. Homes like Marvin Shores. It'll also provide profound tax revenue to places like Raleigh County, West Virginia, who has needs for its senior citizens just like they have in Bay City, Michigan. Far more revenue coming off a wind farm than ever comes from blowing up mountains for coal. So while I love migrating birds, too, I heard an insane one outside the window the other day when it warmed up a little bit. The minute the temperatures got warm, there he was, sitting in a bush outside, warbling his little heart out. Like, will you get going? This ain't spring. Go! This is not spring! Why are you... Get! Fly! Go! I love them, too. And I hate it when the neighbor cats, you know, leave them on the porch for us as gifts. But that's nature. And the fact of the matter, it is an absolute fact that cats kill more birds than windmills. They just do. But we do, what Cindy says is absolutely true. We've got to have a coherent individual energy policy. From Reverbo, hey, seniors get 10% off at Denny's. That story is shameful, but unfortunately not isolated. Everyone knows that life comes with a price tag, but the cost for too many hard-working patriotic Americans is punitive. That man risked his life for his country when he was young so he could stay warm when he got old. The irony here that his sacrifice cost him his life when he was 90 is appalling. They want your checkbook open from the cradle to the grave. Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's other weird, bizarre, tragic ugliness going down. There's no... There seems no end to it. The breaking story that... The story that broke just before I came on the air. Man kills wife and five children in Los Angeles. A man shot and killed his wife and five young children, including two sets of twins, before taking his own life Tuesday, possibly out of despair from losing a job. See, the myth is of the Wall Street bigwigs going to the windows and jumping. The reality lies in the grapes of wrath. So we'll take a little break. That's the first hour of the program. Jump in, chime in if you want to. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's all toll free. If you want to do it on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn.
All the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. We work together at the factory. What could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing what's with you. Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome waiting for someone to say hello in that. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot some hollow ancient eyes, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. President Obama's Labor Secretary nominee, Representative Hilda Solis, is being blocked by Republicans. Solis's father was a Teamster, and she is the most pro-worker Labor Secretary nominee in many years. Jim Santangelo is president of Teamsters Joint Council 42 in Southern California.
This nomination is going to go through. There's nobody's going to be able to stop this. They're just playing the little Republican game. That's all this is about. Corporate America's had their way too long, and now is the time to give the people the right to choose a union.
Republicans are anonymously using a Senate hold to block Solis's confirmation until she spells out where she stands on the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform, a reform that candidate Barack Obama fully supported. That reform would make it easier for workers to join unions free of employer intimidation. On Monday, more than 71,000 job cuts were announced at U.S. companies, including 26,000 at Pfizer. Jesse Russell reports.
Monday turned out to be another day of layoff announcements. Ohio and Michigan, two states already suffering from high unemployment rates due to the downturn in the auto industry, will see 2,000 jobs slashed at GM plants in March and April. The company also plans to idle 9 manufacturing plants several weeks during the next 6 months. Overall, production will be cut at 13 of the company's plants. Caterpillar, the heavy equipment maker, announced it would be slashing 20,000 jobs. Based in Illinois, the company also has offices in 3 major Ohio cities. Home Depot plans to cut 7,000 jobs and close its 34 Expo design stores. Last but likely not least, Sprint Nextel said it would be cutting 15% of its workforce, the equivalent of 8,000 jobs.
United Healthcare Workers West President Sal Roselli is calling on SEIU President Andy Stern to compromise and reconcile with the large local on the forced moving of 65,000 UHW members into another local.
Our members have repeatedly instructed us in no uncertain terms to resist the forced, undemocratic transfer of our long-term care members out of the UHW without a free choice.
SEIU International's Michelle Ringette says the reorganization has already been decided through democratic means, abiding by the SEIU Constitution in the wake of findings from former Labor Secretary Ray Marshall.
In the wake of these findings of serious financial wrongdoing and the practice of undemocratic procedures, today's move by Sal Roselli and his leadership team really comes to no surprise.
Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
As housing prices continued a downward trend, Bargain Hunter snatched up deals, sending sales of existing homes up in December. 6.5% more homes were sold in December of 2008 than were sold in November. While that may be a nice change of pace concerning the rest of the year, in comparison to a year prior, home sales were still down by 3.5%. On average, prices are down 15% from a year prior.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We got 45 minutes left in this second hour. I was trying to think of something to go out with on the story on which we spent the first hour and probably some portion of the remainder of the program. And I think I'm going to be remembering for a while. Anyway, you turn it and look at it. John Prine's song, Hello in There. And, you know, it makes me want to spit when I see that city manager saying, well, you know, the neighbors should have kept an eye on him. It only took 4 days to freeze him to death from the time that the city put that limiter on his meter until his body was found. He could have frozen to death in the first couple of days. We don't know. But it's the neighborhood's fault, not the power company's fault. Never the power company's fault. Certainly isn't Don Blankenship's fault. Praying for coal prices to rise, or any of the other slugs who work for the companies that do mountain range removal. Here in my neck of the woods, that would be the slugs from Consol. Ugh. There's breaking news. It's breaking heart news. Really stupid news. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's go to the phones first. Hey, Gene.
Hey, well, I was going to tell you about my experience last night at the town hall meeting. It does kind of reflect on what happened to the gentleman that the 92-year-old that posted that. I was surprised at how slick my Republican senator was.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you could tell he was a Republican, but it's like there wasn't any of this yelling.
Was that from the horns coming growing out of his head? Or no, I'm sorry.
No. It was the things that he said, but isn't the victory? It was weird because the first thing I noticed when he got there, and I'm looking at the I did a Democratic town hall just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm kind of comparing the two in my mind. And the first thing I noticed when I went to this one is, first of all, people had brought their kids with them, which that I thought was kind of a plus. Getting them started early in a process. I was kind of thinking about the show that you did on Saturday with the Progressive Democrats of West Virginia and stuff like that. So that was the first thing I remembered, and that was a plus. From there, it kind of got worse. He didn't really have to toe the Republican line too heavily because the crowd did that for him.
What?
And, yeah, it was weird because they.
Yeah, I mean, let's remember, this is Oregon we're talking about here.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's the weird part because it's like, the Republicans here, I mean, they're Republicans, but they on some Democratic issues, they'll kind of let it slide. But I noticed the age breakdown because the younger ones, they tended to be just fairly quiet and observant. The older ones are like, it's all, you know, because, like, there was a guy there that brought up, well, it's funny because he attributed things like FDR's program stuff to Teddy Roosevelt, of course. And it's like, no, you're talking about FDR. And so it was kind of interesting because he brought that up and he said, well, are we ever going to do anything like that? And, you know, my Republican senator is, you know, basically my state senator is very pro private business and all that stuff. So it's kind of like, well, I'm not sure. And then that same guy turned around and had to bring in Second Amendment gun rights and stuff like that. So the reason this affects the 93-year-old man and that kind of stuff is basically the Republicans here, they have to do, they tend to be the party that you go to for things like senior and disabled health care issues. Because, as we talked about before, the Dems tend to be more supportive of education because of Measure 5 and having to cut and all this stuff. So I noticed this morning, and I'm writing it on one of the newer personal blogs about this, this Democrat that is in Nancy Pelosi's inner circle, this guy from South Carolina who basically doesn't really want to pass national health care, because he lived through 1994 and was afraid of the backlash. The guy's name is Clyburn from South Carolina.
Yes.
You know him?
I know of him, yes.
Yeah, so you know, and it makes me mad, because it's like, I wish that, unfortunately, I wish the Democratic leadership was on top of the health care issue, simply because that would take a lot of pressure off the state Dems that have to make these choices. And I have the feeling, if you went from state to state, that you might see this Democratic Republican breakdown, where surprisingly the Republicans are the ones that are doing the are kind of in for the senior and disabled health care, and it's them that represent the education end of it, when frankly there shouldn't be an adversarial relationship. So, because I know in Arizona, let's see, they're 49th in, or they were 49th in, school funding in the United States, just above Mississippi. And since there's been a Republican governor there, they've decided to go ahead and cut their school funding even more. So I don't know, they're probably 50th by now, since Napolitano went ahead and got appointed to the Department of Homeland Security. So it kills me that we have to make these kinds of choices. And
that's the thing, Gene. I'm not sure that we do have to make these kinds of choices. To use a really trite phrase, I'm not convinced that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time, so to speak. But a paradigm has been created, Gene.
Yeah.
We can only defend against the terrorists if we're letting old people freeze.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing that really kills me, because it's like, I don't like it when I see Dems fall into that same paradigm. I mean, come on, we ought to be able
to. Oh, yeah, I mean, I gotta, it is a minuscule thing by comparison. But Gene, you know, we've got a new day of hope has dawned, and I don't say that sarcastically, and I don't think you either. There is hope in this new administration. There is hope in being broken away from the nightmare depravity of George W. Bush and all of his crooked cronies. But it doesn't fill you with inspiration when you click over, like I just did a minute ago, and find out. Let me see if it's too much to read. An aide to Vice President Joe Biden tells CNN he called Chief Justice John Roberts last week to apologize for a lighthearted remark he made over the flubbed Inauguration Day oath of office. That's right. We got a new Democratic administration in the White House, and we're off and apologizing already.
Does
that make you a little crazy?
Yes, it does. Because it's like these guys, we've always got to have this kumbaya unity moment. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm sick of it. And it's funny, because the Republicans, as you noted yesterday with the tribute to W, are whining about how they're so abused and how they want that knowing lion.
Oh, God. Oh, it just makes me want. It just about makes me fall over. Knowing lion.
It's like, what the heck are you talking? But it's like, it's just such a shock. I guess on the positive, you know, it was weird, because these new Republicans are really interesting. I mean, it's like last night, the first thing out of my senator's mouth, and one of the first things was, oh, he was really thought Obama does a great job. But like I say, he didn't have to really. Yeah, I mean, he pushed the standard Republican spiel almost. But the crowd was the one that really took the heat. And the one thing that really got me, and I was glad I had somebody else come along, because otherwise I would have missed this. But when it came to, you know, tax issues and stuff, it was absolutely, no, he wasn't going to support it. But the one idea that got his attention, because basically Oregon has a stimulus package they want to borrow to get some jobs going, and this was about one of the things they want to work on is the community college. And this Republican senator is on our local transportation committee, so of course he'd rather see the money spent on roads and that kind of thing. And actually that kind of sort of makes sense, but what I thought was kind of interesting is he said, well, somebody brought up the idea of having the prisoners in our prison population work on repairing the roads or roofs for the community colleges. And they took a shine to that idea. He thought that was great. And I suppose it might be great as long as they don't abuse the prisoners. I don't know. I'm not sure what to think of this, but it's like that got a positive response. When it came to things like taxes, not so much. The one nice thing about my experience is, see, we talked about before how Oregonians hate sales tax. And they do. But some of us anywhere begins, there was a girl there that was unemployed, and she wanted to know if she was going to get taxed for her unemployment benefits. So she instead said, why don't you bring up a value-added tax? And I've seen this girl before because she was the only other person that was at both meetings that I noticed. Unless, of course, these same older folks were the same ones that were there. Because with the Democratic meeting that I went to, I mean, people were angry at the representatives. Here, they were more tended to be, more fair-minded joke. And I just, I guess, I know, I love this town. It's fairly progressive, but you don't have to dig too deep before you find the Republicans. I'm wondering if the local conservative station, which I don't listen to, I sent people to both of them, and of course, the one being the Democratic town hall, they tended to be more vocal. And this guy, they were like sweet as old pie. Cause everybody was taking the pictures. They had like I said, they had a Boy Scout troop there. He got his picture taken with them, all that stuff. And it was slick. And I didn't see that so much on the Democratic side. I mean, they were there and they discussed it, and it was a good talk, but people were actually more angry at the Democratic rep than they were at the Republican rep, which I thought was kind of, geez, guys, I mean, you're usually pretty progressive. I think in Portland you would have found it would have been what you think, whereas with more people being angry at a Republican there, but I don't know that there is a Republican in Multnomah County as far as coming from the high up
right
in the legislature.
Sure. Well, you know, I got to say that among those that I met last week, I was impressed with Ron Wyden. I mean, I don't expect any of these people to get it right all the time. Because we're dealing with human frailties and human failings.
Yeah.
But he seemed like he had his head screwed on pretty good.
Oh. our national senators, you know, except for maybe the one guy, I forget his name, is from down south. There's just one Republican and they all rest definitely Democrats, and they're pretty cool. But I mean, the state senators here, outside of the Portland area, they tend to be more evenly divided than they are at the national level. And I mean, the guy was nice. He was courteous. He was, you know, very, like I said, he was slick. And anybody else that was at that meeting wouldn't have had a problem with him. I just noticed little things like, I would call it, extraordinary support for private property stuff. And of course, it was the government that's ruining capitalism, not capitalists. And stuff like that. But, you know, anybody else would have said, oh, he's a nice guy. And would have been very impressed with him. And I'll have to admit, I was, you know, like I say, he was smooth. He was a nice guy. I didn't feel real animosity toward him. I didn't, of course, at least not personally. Now, his party, I could give 2 cents for. But, oh, if that much.
Right.
But, I mean, this guy was slick. And I just get the feeling, if you look at, I mean, aside from the knowing lying Republicans that are left, if you look at the newer Republicans.
That phrase really is going to go down in history, isn't it?
I hope.
In the history of stupidity, knowing lying. Lying, you know, I was trying to think where that came from, you know, because you can kind of transpose letters. And it's not a true, it's by no means is it an anagram. But lying moron came to mind.
Yeah. Or lying nose is what I was thinking.
Lying jackal.
That was there. Hyena, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean.
Yeah, I mean he did giggle when he had Carla Faye Tucker killed. After all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I like you've said before. I mean, Obama's got 2 years to really work a minor miracle, or a not so minor miracle, if you can call it, well, a minor persuasive object, whatever, I don't know. You don't like the word miracle, so.
Yeah, well, no. Only because it takes away from so much human hard work.
Yeah, it does, and you're right. But it's like, these new Republicans, I find them a little bit disconcerting because they do come off so charming.
Well, yeah, I mean, they know which fork to use with the shrimp and all of that. Sure.
Yeah, I was glad that I looked at the guy's wiki page before I went in and saw him, because I wouldn't have known this, because, of course, he went ahead and put all the standard Republican bills before our legislature. I don't know if they passed. I can't remember. I'd have to reread it again. But I would not have known if I hadn't read that ahead of time. That, you know, really he is, at his heart, your typical Republican, because he doesn't sound like he sounds very reasonable. And a reasonable Republican, a reasonable Republican to me is a dangerous Republican.
Well, it's also an oxymoron.
Well,
because
at the end
of the day, they're still Republicans. Okay,
yeah.
So they're still going to, sooner or later, you leave one of them alone long enough, or, you know, just sort of walk away and turn your back on the reasonable Republican and the liquor bottle. You know, they'll get a snoot full and they'll start to, free market can solve everything.
Yeah. And So, anyway, I just had to call in and share my experience last night, because I found it to be very, very enlightening in a scary kind of way. So with that, I'll let you get back to your thing.
Well, I thank you, Gene.
Okay.
And we will talk soon.
All right.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Gene getting out there doing the activist thing.
And let's see what else is going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
It was funny that today, or ironic, that not too long before your program came on, my son was over and I was saying something about the faith-based initiative, and I said, I wonder what happened to all that money. And
didn't pay no power bills.
No, and I, you know, I do. I think they ought to be investigated. But that's beside the point. The gentleman, you know, he sounded like he might have lived in a poor neighborhood, and the other neighbors might have been.
No, I mean, just working class neighborhood. I mean, I've seen a picture of the house. It's pretty little yellow shingled, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just like a million other houses in America. Pardon?
You know, like they did. But that's just, they don't want to face facts. But I know down here, it's hard to get help even if you're qualified, because you have to go through all kind of hoops for them to see if you're qualified for any kind of help. The only time that I ask, I've always had a problem with my light bill. It seemed like I was paying. I always thought I was paying for another family. But people just couldn't believe, you know, my light bill. And it's still the same thing. Only now with me knowing I got an income coming in, at least I can, you know, budget for it if I, you know, and do without if I have to. But one time when I was really low, I went and I did get help. I was having problems paying my light bill. It was just a big problem. I'd be late all the time. And one time I was just definitely going to be late. And I had, like, the help from the government, but you can only get it, like, the one time. And that was a big help. Well, there was a guy came over, was going to cut off my lights, but he came to the door, and I told him that I was supposed to be getting help, and he said, okay, you know, he was real nice. Well, it happened again, so I went to the Salvation Army and to see if they could help me, and I'd always, you know, admired the Salvation Army. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a nightclub singer by night and a Salvation Army by day. And, you know, in it. And this just broke my heart, because I went and they said, be nice, you know, and wanted to know my expenses. And they were asking, you know, like lights and water and all that stuff. And I said, what about my regular bills? Oh, that doesn't count. So she told me to call back in end of the week, and I called back, and she said, well, you know, it was less than $100 that you didn't account for. I want to know what happened to it. And I said, well, it probably was, you know, unexpected expenses. Well, for instance, she said, for instance, what kind of unexpected expenses? Just put me through the rigmarole, and I couldn't think. And somebody...
Oh, yeah. That's
like that. I can't think.
That's torment for being poor.
And I didn't think about, you know, I know they help a lot of people that are on drugs and that, you know, have all these other things. And I didn't have anything except I like my iced tea. But, you know, not that I had never done anything, but I sure wasn't doing it then. But I don't know. It just hurt me so bad. But she ended up saying, well, I'll pay half of it, like that. Well, I was so afraid to say anything, because that would be, you know, help me some. But anyway, I got it together, and they were sending it in, and they did. She paid half of it. And I got the other and sent it in the mail. And I didn't call them and tell them it was on the way. It was been out, mailed a couple of days. Well, all of a sudden my lights were off. And I looked out, and there was this guy leaving, and he was going into the truck, to the light company truck. And I went out, and I said, did you cut off my lights? And he said, yeah. I said, you hadn't paid your bill. And I said, well, it is in the mail. Well, I can't help that. You know, he was one of those that looked like he really enjoyed doing.
Yeah, there's a.
Like he loved it.
There's a kind of person that, yeah, enjoys it.
But he would not. He said, I said, it is in the mail. I said, I didn't call him. I should have called him, but it is in the mail. And he just refused to turn it on. So I had to wait till the light company would, you know, got paid so they would turn it on. But, you know, all that, you know, you have to, I don't know how it is up there, but you could have to really jump through the hoops. And then you go and you might make too much money. The man, they might have, you know, they got a limit. You can hardly make anything down here to qualify for any kind of help.
Oh, I know. I mean, if you want any help, you've got to be something right next door to dead.
Oh, yeah. And Jeb Bush, he lowered the amount one year right before he left. You know how they have an amount that you can make? And he lowered. Usually they'd always raise it a little bit. But, and you can't get Medicaid down here unless you're on disability.
Right.
And I don't know how to, and now they're trying to cut out. I get a thing from Charlie Crist, and they're trying to cut out some different things to help, that helps people out. You know, we've had a Republican Congress since I don't know when, for probably 20 years at least. And, anyway, they're trying to cut out some kind of raises for the teachers. And then I want to tell you, this is really why I got off the subject, but I saw on the news today, I don't know what light company it is here in Florida, but they're wanting a 15% raise.
No, not surprising.
All of them. And they just got a raise. They said they're just not making enough money. And this is what they said. They want to develop their nuclear power. It was going to cost a lot more money. Why don't they go the other way? You know.
Well, see, I've kind of left this little story alone up here because it was sort of local, but it also kind of gets into some of the problems that we face in trying to go forward with some sort of a new energy future. I saw a letter to the editor in the Charleston, West Virginia paper not too long back, Juanita, from this guy who was a part of, oh, what was it? Save Our Potomac Highlands.
Uh-huh.
And the Potomac Highlands are a geographic feature in West Virginia, and they are drop-dead beautiful. They are exquisite. But opinion piece where he talks about how, you know, wind farms are bad and and you know, he doesn't want any windmills in his beautiful Potomac Highlands, and what we need are some new nuclear power plants.
Oh, aren't they beautiful? Ooh, won't that be beautiful?
And you know, I was really proud, Juanita. I did not let loose of my inner snark, because it's a very well developed snark.
Exactly.
And it's got big, sharp, nasty teeth. And write back saying, well, I propose that we build the first of these fabulous nuclear power plants right in his damn backyard.
Yeah.
Pardon my mouth, Juanita. But right smack dab in the middle of his savable, beautiful Potomac Highlands.
Uh-huh.
Because, see, these people that, you know, it's NIMBYism. NIMBYism. NIMBY. Not in my backyard.
Oh, okay.
NIMBY.
Ain't that the truth?
You know, it's we need some new nuclear power plants. Put it over there by the poor people.
Yeah.
And see, I got no stomach for that. And I'll get up in the face of anybody that wants to go toe to toe on that. Cuz you know what, there are issues at work here. I mean, well, it's like the Coal River Wind Project. There is not a there's not an everybody gets a pony alternative. It's blow the mountain up or put windmills on it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Right.
There's no, you know, no ponies in the equation.
Yeah.
And I realize that there are negatives to it. But the biggest negative of all is no more mountain. The biggest negative of all is more poisoning for the people who live in that community.
Uh-huh.
The biggest negative of all is the systematic planned depopulation of that community. The biggest negative of all is children going to school in poisonous circumstances.
Yeah.
None of that happens with a wind farm. So you balance that against the negatives of the wind farm.
Well,
and I think the wind farm wins, I'm pretty sure.
Everything, you know, there's always the yin and the yang to everything. And you just have to choose which one's the lesser of the two evils sometime, even, or the lesser of the two goods, or the best of the two goods, or whatever. Just nothing's perfect. But there are some things that are more perfect than others. I mean, some things are more suitable for what you need them for, but just people don't want to, they don't want to change. And
well, see, right here where I live, Juanita, 2 miles as the crow flies, or any other bird that hasn't been, you know, depopulated from these mountains. They're blowing up the mountain. My house shakes. My children feel the blasts, okay? Yeah. Pretty soon the water will start changing, if it hasn't already.
Yeah.
And there is an intentional planned depopulation of this area for the sake of mountain removal coal, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at present, there is plan A that says keep blowing up the mountains because they're working on 5,000 acres, but they've got access to 20,000 more. And that'll just ring the whole community, and that'll be the end of Anstead, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's the idea that somehow or another, our congressman, and I mean no disrespect in this whatsoever, Nick Rahal, my congressman, was part and parcel. I mean, the whole New River and Gauley River National Recreation Areas are his baby. He was instrumental to their creation. And they are, in fact, his legacy. And they support millions upon millions upon millions of dollars per year tourism industry here.
Uh-huh.
And there's this idea that that we can buy up the rest, that we can buy up the rest of the land that they would otherwise mountain remove, and make it part of the national recreation area.
Uh huh.
And that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But between you, I think it was you and I talking. We lost 71,000 jobs yesterday and 10,000 today.
Now,
where's the money going to come from to buy those mountains? And see, right. the thing is that the land companies that own it. They're not going to sell that land for anything less than what they could get by destroying it for the coal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where's that money going to come from? Then alternative three is put windmills on them. Those mountains will support a wind farm.
Mm-hmm.
So once again,
and eventually they'll have smaller and smaller ones too. Eventually.
Well, they've got to be tall enough. These things, these things are 32 stories tall.
Uh huh.
They've got to get up into the really whipping around winds. And, you know, I learned a little bit about that the firsthand the other day flying home from Dulles.
Uh-huh.
It was a little twin-engine turboprop aircraft. It didn't get that high in the air. But as we descended to land at Beckley International Airport, we got hit as we kind of looped in and had to turn back and aim at the runway. We got hit at a certain level about where the hubs of the windmills would be with gusts of wind that made me grab the arms of my chair and my knuckles turn white.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, fierce winds They're there. But if you take the mountains down, sorry, you can't reach the wind.
Uh huh.
Because because those mountains themselves, it's like the ad that our buddy Nick Regalado voiced. They literally, the mountains shape the wind. And if the mountains are gone,
that's amazing, isn't it?
The wind changes. You know, it's just like water running over pebbles in a stream. That it's the pebbles in the stream that determine what the stream's nature is going to be.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I learned a little bit about that firsthand. And I guess it's hard for people to comprehend who are outside of this region. But there's no pony in the equation, no unicorns. Mm-hmm. It would be great, you know. I mean, I've actually, and Agnes has done a lot of it too. Looked around for grants for the horn.
Yeah.
That would cover the cost of us putting up a couple of, you know, I guess call them domestic windmills.
Yeah.
And solar panels all over the place, so that when we turn all of this live, we can say that beyond a shadow of a doubt, this network is powered by green energy and has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the rape and destruction of Appalachia. Well, we haven't found that yet, but the day that we do is the day that it happens.
Yeah.
So,
Well, they're starting giving out grants and, I guess, loans, too, to companies and schools and so forth down here. But I don't know how long it'd be before the individual can get something. You can get some of the light companies offer the water heating that you can get. But
well, that's that. What is it? LIHEAP, low income electrical assistance program, heating and LIHEAP, low income heating and electrical assistance program. That money filters down from the federal government to the states every year, Juanita, and every year there's a bunch of Republicans standing in front of them going, them poor people don't, we need tax cuts for our corporate buddies. That'll help them keep up their electricity.
Yeah. Well, like that time that I applied, I guess that's what I applied to, and that was just one-time help. That was it. And I didn't try to.
Yeah, I think if I understand it correctly, it's once a season. In other words, you can get a little bump in the worst of winter or whatever.
Yeah.
But then, you know, no more until the next year comes around.
Right. And then sometime now they run out of money. And that's another thing they're talking about, cutting out a lot of the programs they already have down here. And we had, after years, we finally got a pretty good bus system in out here. In surrounding areas, and in December, they cut them back because of the gas prices, they said. And now, you know, it would take 40 forevers for me to just go 4 or 5 miles and back.
Right.
Whereas it would take maybe an hour the other way. But they have totally different routes and everything. And, so I don't know, and it was really messing up a lot of there where they stopped at this one retirement home, and there were people there that would catch the bus right there at the retirement home, and they were going to put it down like a few blocks down. Well, some of the people weren't able to go down there, but that was it. You know, they made up their mind. The reason I know about it is there was a woman that she went to the meetings, and she said the last meeting they had, they were determined what they were going to do, and they weren't listening to anybody. They were, you know, the powers that they were going to do whatever they wanted to do, and that was it. So, we really have, you know, for years, I think about when I had to work, you know, if I'd have had transportation, cheap transportation, I could have probably saved some money maybe. But always having to worry about cars, cars, cars. How are you going to get to work, you know? And there a lot of time I walked to work. I walked and rode a bicycle for a while, and you get threatened, you know, because it's down here, it's a high crime area. It just gets worse and worse. But there are people now, they're riding their bikes and golf carts, and I saw one guy just had the framework he was driving.
No body, not just the wow.
Nobody, just the framework of something.
Kind of gives a whole new definition to that old "I ain't got no body."
Yeah, but people are. A lot of people are selling their blood. It is something else, and so time they're going to run out of water blood. Unless they're rare. I've got some rare blood. But anyway, I can't say that I'm better off, but I know I could lose at any time, you know, because I do get Social Security now. And I feel better off. I feel, you know, like when you're on a job, you feel like you could lose it or they could cut your salary or anything at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And they can. They can do anything they want to. You got no say-so.
Well, that family, Juanita, where the man killed his wife and his children?
Yeah.
Out in California today?
Uh-huh.
Both he and his wife worked for Kaiser Permanente, which is, you know, the health insurance corporation.
Bless their heart.
And they had recently lost their jobs.
Yeah. And you know, there's going to be more and more. And then there's other people going to take it out on the outside.
Yeah, but see, yeah. we don't have it.
We already have.
What blows my mind is we've got unemployment compensation, and that's about it. And you have to move heaven and earth to actually get the federal government to chip in to extend it in the hardest of times. You know, apart from that, you know, you get laid off from Kaiser Permanente or anywhere else, and you're suddenly unemployed, and you got seven children to feed, and you've just been handed an apple and a roadmap.
Yeah.
You know, I won't say
I remember DeLay what he said. Oh, if we give them any more, they won't want to work. I'll tell you, Christmas Carol comes to my mind.
What, are the poor houses all closed? Dear Lord, I know.
So anyway, okay, well.
Well, Juanita, it's good to hear from you, and you know, hang in there. And that's you know, that's all any of us can do is hang in there, because
that's right.
We're up against the wall, and they mean to keep us this way.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and it's like Kevin said that we're expendable. Isn't that what it is? Expendable?
Yep.
We're unnecessary in their eyes.
Yeah, unless we're actively contributing to their profit margin, but see, even poor folks do that. Poor folks having less money spend what money we have. You know, you were talking about how merciless a bill collector can be. I mean, this isn't the Bob Kincaid sob story hour or anything, but I spent the kids' Christmas money making a house payment last month.
Uh-huh.
You know, trying to hang on to my dad's place down in Alabama against all odds. And I told him outright, that's what we're doing. And the nasty old lady at the end of it said, well, that's just what we have to do sometimes. Can't you come up with a little bit more?
Ain't that warm the cockles of your heart?
Yeah, it warms something.
I wonder if she's the one that calls into C-SPAN all the time. She's from Alabama, some woman from Alabama, and she, all of us are stupid, and she's telling how she worked and how she saved money. I saved $100,000. Well, good for you, lady.
Life's been good to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you take care, Juanita, and we will talk soon.
Okie-doke. You have a good night.
Okay, you
Bye-bye.
Too. Bye now. Love talking to Juanita. I'm hanging on to that one. It would take me 40 forevers. That's a keeper. Now I said we'll take a little break here, but I said that there was some disturbing news out, and there is. On the one hand, what I mentioned when talking with Gene, and you know, like I said, this is a tiny little thing, and maybe it's an attempt to return to civility. But I'm sicker than hell of apologizing to Repiglicans. These dirty, rotten, filthy bastards who created the world in which a 93-year-old man can freeze to death in his home. Yeah, I know Michigan's a Democratic state. Yeah, I understand that. But it's the, you know, why can't there be federal monies for extended low-income heating and electricity assistance? Why is it a one-off deal like Juanita was describing? And we have to apologize to them? You know, John Roberts screwed up the oath of office. And so Joe Biden the other day said, my memory's not as good as Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, when he was asking for a copy of the oath so he could read it to somebody. And there were some groans and nervous chuckles and an absolute stone-faced Barack Obama. And so we get word today that Joe Biden has apologized to John Roberts. Forgive me if I think that this isn't along the same lines as the guy who got shot in the face apologizing to Cheney. And they're off. And apologizing. When does the lower Ninth Ward get an apology from the Repig-Lickin' Party? When does the Mississippi Gulf Coast get an apology from the Repig-Lickin' Party? That wasn't a little ribbing. That was negligent homicide. And fraud. And a lot of other things. When do we get an apology for lying to start a war? When do we get an apology for a negligent EPA that blithely allowed Kingston, Tennessee to happen? When do we get that apology? When do we get an apology for a negligent administration that allowed a major highway interstate bridge over the Mississippi River in Minnesota to collapse with drivers on it? When do we get that one? Now, I think we both know the answer to that, don't we? Ain't coming anytime soon. And there are other things to go into in the final hour. But I also want to take a moment to note the passing at the age of 76 of John Updike. I started reading John Updike when I was considerably younger, teenage even. He was roundly adored by the literati crowd whose words found their way onto the pages of magazines like Esquire and Playboy. Yes, I actually read the articles even when I was a teenager. Shh. Don't tell my mom I had them. But we all did. And John Updike was one of those names that just... And so I figured, well, okay, time to go. And so down to the library I went. And I read Rabbit Run and Rabbit Redux, and Rabbit is Rich, and Rabbit at Rest later on, because these things, because they weren't out, some of them weren't out when I was younger. But I kept up with the Rabbit story, Harry Rabbit Angstrom. Great piece of novel writing, just about sort of American suburbanness. And what it does inside the mind of a suburbanite. John Updike's article about Ted Williams is one for the ages if you've never read it. And he died of lung cancer today in Massachusetts at the age of 76. And you hate seeing these because I don't know who the next, I don't know if there is another, I don't know if there's a, there wasn't a next Hemingway and there isn't likely to be a next Updike. He was brilliant and to some degree or another, for whatever it's worth, formed a part of the pastiche of my consciousness. And his was a life well lived. And we note his passing. So I'll bump out with this Bruce Springsteen tune because Rabbit Run starts out with Harry Rabbit Angstrom, former high school basketball star, bugging out on his family. And I always thought that, I always wondered if Bruce Springsteen had read Rabbit Run when he wrote this. So see you around, John Updike. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Jump right in. The conversation's fine. I said there was some disturbing news, and there is. And there's some fun stuff to be done, too. And also in this hour, horse's rear end of the day. You know, how, you know, big for-profit shows have segments that they do and stuff. Yeah, well, why not? Horse's ass of the day. I've got a surefire nominee. But before I do that, the disturbing stuff. It appears, and maybe you already know this, going into the break, I mentioned, we're often apologizing. This from the blog over at feministing.com. Good blog. Headline, breaking, family planning revision removed from stimulus bill. Yeah, I know. Really, we caved. Again. House Democrats have removed a provision from their stimulus bill that would exempt states from the need to get waivers for covering family planning under Medicaid. The family planning aid has been the subject of repeated Republican attacks over the past few days. Just sort of a reminder, those little nattering nabobs of negativity are in the minority now! And healthcare advocates were dismayed by the Democrats' decision to give in on its removal. Tough to stomach. Oh, yeah. And I get the right-wing blasts. Just sickening, disgusting. Nancy Pelosi says poor are too expensive and should not be born. Lying bastards. And they won. They won. Now, for those of you playing the home game, I will not take issue with you should you suddenly look up and say, what the hell was all that fighting about if we were... Why? We wanted a majority in the Congress, but why did we need one if we're going to... I'm sorry, I should be a professional broadcaster and speak much better than that. The rain in Spain falls mainly... Samita, posting this at feministing.com, says, apparently caving on provisions that are common sense and make the government more efficient is how we will win the support of the right, especially when it compromises reproductive services and health care access to poor women and women of color. Anything to be... there's that word, obstructionist. We can't have women being out there empowered with a little pill they take every day.
that keeps them from having the babies that Jesus wants them to have. Now, bear in mind, we only love the little babies while they're in the mommy, and after they're out of the mommy, they can freeze to death like Mr. Schur did for all the Republicans care. But we can't let women make their own reproductive choices. Because you got to remember, how long have I been saying this? In order to ever overturn Roe versus Wade, the right wing would have to overturn Griswold versus Connecticut. Griswold versus Connecticut has nothing to do with abortion. Griswold versus Connecticut instead is about adult access to birth control. The right wing hates abortion, but not for the reasons that they put, it's the sacred little fetus. No. The right wing hates abortion because it empowers women. The right wing hates abortion because it takes away their authoritarian control over a woman's innards. And for that same reason, the right wing hates Griswold versus Connecticut. Because birth control, contraception, family planning is at the core of the self-determination that spells the end of authoritarian rule. You must remember, we have laws all over this country now, or proposals for laws all over this country now, that says a pharmacist who can step away and not fill a birth control prescription because it's a matter of conscience. Because if you pay attention to the right-wing evangelicals, you will sooner or later hear this phrase. Silent abortion. That's right. Taking them little hormone pills causes silent abortions. Now all the little fetuses that never got to be anything more than blastocysts and had such ambition for fetushood, and they just wind up in the toilet. Damn. Yeah. So they win. It has got to be really gratifying. It's got to be really gratifying to be John Boehner and sit there and put another notch in a gun that doesn't have any damn bullets in it. Cave-in artists. This is not inspiring. This is not change I can believe in. Just saying. You know, not turning on anybody, but you know what? Because I'm not a right-winger, because I don't do top-down, because all we've got here is our integrity and the blood, sweat, and damn tears that we put out to create this majority in the Congress, and the heartache, and the nastiness, and the vileness, and the filth that we put up with to put Barack Obama in the White House. You and I have earned the right, by God, to be disgusted when we watch them quiver and quaver and eventually collapse like so much jello in a rising sun. And that's what they did. It is what they did. Now, I'm sure there are those who are, the political geniuses who will say, well, you know, this was all just a setup. They had their hissy about it, and we meant to give this away. Well, that's even worse. to use something like a woman's access, you know, and not just any woman. We're not talking about the $100,000 a year plus women of this country or their children, their daughters. We're talking about working women. We're talking about women who do not have the political power to make these demands on their own. We're not talking about women who ride on corporate jets. We're talking about women who sweep hallways and change bedpans in hospitals. We're talking about women who work for pathetically low wages, being the genius brain behind some lawyer or some doctor somewhere. Overworked and underpaid and certainly underserved inside this government of ours. And as was often the cry that went up from the picket lines in the earliest days of the struggles for labor, when a labor organization would find out that they had been infiltrated and that the company knew what everything they were doing and what their next move would be, a cry would go up, and that cry was, "We've been sold!" Well, ladies, you've been sold. Like it. Maybe they'll get back around to you some other day. You know, sometime. I don't expect you to lie, you know, biologically, I don't, well, yeah, I do, because I got daughters. This matters. So I do have, yeah, I've got cards, and I've got a hand in this game. Meanwhile, headlines from CNN. Mom catches surprise twin in pants. I don't even want to know. There's a portrait up now at CNN.com of the dead family from California. They were a family of color. And mercy, how beautiful they were. Kaiser Permanente, West Los Angeles, has said, "We are deeply saddened to hear of the deaths of the Lupo family. Our sympathies are with their extended family," because the whole family got killed, "and friends at this time. We are also providing resources and support to our employees who are affected by this tragedy." Don't worry. Nobody from management at Kaiser Permanente West Los Angeles is going to go home and French kiss the barrel of a .38 tonight for what they did to the Lupo family. Tell Michael, I always liked him. It was only business. A note was also found in the home. Its contents were not divulged, but it was said that it could be described as a suicide note. Jesus. What a beautiful little family. What a beautiful big family. Husband, wife, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children. Beautiful children. And see, the easy way out on this is to say, well, obviously, he was insane. You know me, I never take the easy route. Nails lose shoes, shoes lose horses, horses lose kings, and kings lose kingdoms. Both parents worked at Kaiser Permanente West Los Angeles. Both parents were terminated. That's hard to stomach. Yeah, I know. Individual isolated events are not necessarily indicative of overall. Sure, save the clinical stuff for somebody else. Because I see that little family portrait, and I know that there are thousands of others just like them all over this country, hanging on by the skin of their teeth. 11,500 times it happened today. 11,500 families. It happened 74,000 times yesterday, and yet the Republican Party is still sitting in the House of Representatives licking itself and saying, well, we kept them women from getting the pill on the public dole. Pity there's no hell. Because John Boehner would sure have a place of honor there, wouldn't he? And the American Family Association. You know, they've got millions. The American Family Association has millions. They gave $500,000 alone, and that was just off the interest to make sure that people who already had the right to marry in California would have that right stripped away from them. But not a damn dime for Mr. Schur in Michigan, and not a damn dime for the Lupo family in California, not a penny. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. Go to hell, American Family Association. Sorry, just happens. Hard to resist. Ah, horse's ass of the night. And you would think at this point that it would be a close. No. Fox News contributor Juan Williams is our horse's ass of the night. And, you know, this does kind of dovetail a little bit. Because to the extent that the right wing hates women, they hate women of power and or charisma the most. Most of the time, they can just forget about poor women. Not even worth thinking about. But the powerful ones, they despise openly and frequently and with all the vim and vitriol that they can manage. And in this case, it's Juan Williams. Juan Williams, who has, I guess, participated in the opening salvos against Michelle Obama. Just as the opening salvos began in January 1993 against Hillary Clinton. I'm not surprised by it. I hope to goodness you're not. What am I talking about? This is Juan Williams on, of course, the Falafel Boys program. Bill O'Reilly, talking with Mary Catherine Hamm. And frankly, David from Tennessee put me onto this earlier, and then I found the audio of it, and it's stunning, so I'm just going to let it speak for itself.
All right, Juan, Michelle Obama, I don't know much about Mrs. Obama, but she's now has the power of the First Lady's pulpit, which is considerable. How do you think she's going to use this power, Juan?
Well, you know, I mean, what they say is that she's going to make an effort with military families. She's going to try to do more with kids, especially her own kids. They make the point she's not going to be involved with policy as an advisor to her husband, but actually going to try to keep control of the family with her mother, President Obama's mother-in-law, who's living at the White House. And then finally, don't forget, she's got to be a role model. We never.
Okay, so what's the problem so far? What's to hate? Now, granted, she did come out the other day, I suppose, and evinced a little bit of pique about the fact that her daughter's very likenesses and identities had been appropriated for a little bit of, you know, a little bit of hot button capitalism by the TUI people, the Beanie Baby people. But I mean, come on, wouldn't you?
Had a black woman in this position before, and she's a mom, she's a wife, and she's going to be a role model to millions of people,
okay,
not
usually,
just African-Americans.
Mary Catherine, usually first ladies take on a cause. Laura Bush was literacy. And I'm not sure what Mrs. Obama's cause is going to be. Do you know?
Well, she's talked about taking on the juggling of family and work, which probably entails some sort of family leave discussions, national discussions on that. She has a policy director who's fairly to the left on those issues, although she is going to start with military families, which I think is the best political move when you're talking about supporting families. But, you know, she's got to walk a fine line. Everybody's saying, oh, she's not a talking, you know, she's not just a nice first lady who's just going to be quiet. On the other hand, she's got to not drop sound bites like she did during the campaign, right, that were not helpful to her husband. Because, frankly, if you want
to
be an unpleasant,
right, well, like
heavy-handed
to, yeah,
first,
sure,
lady,
anything
you can,
that she,
well,
says,
you'll end up
you,
like.
Wait. You'll end up like. Come on, Betts. Anybody? You'll end up like.
Hillary Clinton. So.
Ah, told you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and let me just.
Now we're going to get to Juan Williams. Mary Catherine Hamm opens the door and does a little sleazing. What is it, honest to God, what is it with right-wingers and Republicans and strong women? Does it go back to that macho posturing Tosh was talking about in his email last night? Is that what it is? They're scared to death of a woman who would dare to have her own nature. I mean, granted, Mamie Eisenhower, not exactly out there shaking up the world. Pat Nixon, not so much. Betty Ford, well, at least she made some positive change in the world through her through the hell and torment that she went through just being Gerald Ford's wife. You know, it all makes a little bit of sense when you consider her problems in that light. But these Republicans are scared to death of a woman with an opinion. And, yeah, Hillary Clinton, see? What did I tell you? Okay, Juan Williams, open mouth, insert foot.
I'll tell you this. If you think about liabilities for President Obama that are close to him, Joe Biden's up there, but Michelle Obama's right there. Michelle
but it's
Obama,
not her fault,
you know, she's
in
got
the
this Stokely
that...
Carmichael and a designer dress thing going.
What? Stokely Carmichael and a designer dress thing going? Okay, we're gonna have to work through this. Wait.
If she starts talking, as Mary Catherine was suggesting, her instinct is to start with this blame America, you know, I'm the victim. If that stuff starts to come out,
it'll be death.
People will go banana.
It'll be death. Remember, this is Bill O'Reilly who called for Michelle Obama to be lynched. Right? Yeah. Yeah, because I remember that, and so do you. It'll be death.
And it's, and right. She'll go from being the new Jackie O to being something
she's
of
not
an albatross.
She's not going to do that. All right, fine.
Albatross? Really? Albatross? Stokely Carmichael? You know, there was that parody cover of The New Yorker a few months back that showed Michelle Obama with the big old Angela Davis afro. And some of us on this program got a giggle out of that because it was meant to be funny, and it wasn't a parody of the Obamas. It was a parody of the right wing's attempt to smear the Obamas. And it was kind of funny. But now we're at Stokely Carmichael. All right. Born June 29th, 1941, died November 15th, 1998, came to prominence, leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, later as honorary prime minister of the Black Panther Party. He founded that concept, that idea, that image, when he went to Lowndes County, Alabama, and put together something called the African American Lowndes County Freedom Organization, LCFO. Because the Alabama Democratic Party had as its symbol a white rooster, they chose as their symbol a black panther. And there, and so, you know, from there you get, from there on you get the Black Panthers when it's later co-opted by, Huey Newton, Bobby Seale out in Oakland. But let's go back. Let's make sure we get this all right. If she starts, she's got this Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress thing going on. I don't know where it's going on. I've been following some of this kind of closely. She looked absolutely elegant and beautiful and magnificent, wonderful. That seems to be a darn fine mother. But according to Juan Cole, she's got this Stokely Carmichael in a designer dress thing going. If she starts talking, as Mary Catherine suggested, her instinct is to start with this blame America, you know, I'm the victim. If that stuff starts to come out, yeah, it'll be death. Eliminationist rhetoric. So Stokely Carmichael, I went looking through some of Stokely Carmichael's words, and I was trying to find blame America, I'm the victim. Well, this is what I found instead. I found these words of Stokely Carmichael. Now, several people have been upset because we've said that integration was irrelevant when initiated by blacks, and that in fact it was a subterfuge, an insidious subterfuge for the maintenance of white supremacy. Now, we maintain that in the past 6 years or so, this country has been feeding us a thalidomide drug of integration, and that some Negroes have been walking down a dream street talking about sitting next to white people, and that that does not begin to solve the problem. That when we went to Mississippi, we did not go to sit next to Ross Barnett. We did not go to sit next to Jim Clark. We understand white supremacy. We must dismiss the fallacious notion that white people can give anybody their freedom. We must dismiss the fallacious notion that white people can give anybody their freedom. No man can give anybody his freedom. A man is born free. You may enslave a man after he is born, and that is in fact what this country does. It enslaves black people after they're born, so that the only acts that white people can do is to stop denying black people their freedom. That is, they must stop denying freedom. They never give it to anyone. Wow, sure would be a damn shame if Michelle Obama went out and said something like that. I mean, oh my God, that'd be a real albatross around her husband's neck. Albatross, neck, again with the necks, again with the eliminationist rhetoric. But never mind what I read. Now, let's hear it from Stokely Carmichael.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege and an honor to be in the white intellectual ghetto of the West. We wanted to do a couple of things before we started. The first is that based on the fact that SNCC, through the articulation of its program by its chairman, has been able to win elections in Georgia, Alabama, Maryland, and by our appearance here, will win an election in California. 1968, I'm going to run for President of the United States. I just can't make it because I wasn't born in the United States. That's the only thing holding me back. We wanted to say that this is a student conference, as it should be, held on a campus. and that we're not ever to be caught up in the intellectual masturbation of the question of black power. That's a function of people who are advertisers that call themselves reporters. Oh, for my members and friends of the press, my self-appointed white critics. I was reading Mr. Bernard Shaw 2 days ago, and I came across a very important quote, which I think is most apropos for you. He says, all criticism is a autobiography. Dig yourself. Okay. The philosophers Camus and Sartre raised the question whether or not a man can condemn himself. The black existentialist philosopher who was pragmatic, Frantz Fanon, answered the question. He said that man could not. Camus and Sartre does not. We in SNCC tend to agree with Camus and Sartre that a man cannot condemn himself. Were he to condemn himself, he would then have to inflict punishment upon himself. An example would be the Nazis. Any prisoner, any of the Nazi prisoners, who admitted after he was caught and incarcerated that he committed crimes, that he killed all the many people that he killed, he committed suicide. The only ones who were able to stay alive were the ones who never admitted that they committed crimes against people. That is, the ones who rationalized that Jews were not human beings and deserved to be killed, or that they were only following orders. On a more immediate scene, the officials and the population of the white population in Neshoba County, Mississippi, that's where Philadelphia was, could not condemn Rainey, his deputies, and the other 14 men that killed 3 human beings. They could not, because they elected Mr. Rainey to do precisely what he did, and that for them to condemn him will be for them to condemn themselves. In a much larger view, SNCC says that white America cannot condemn herself, and since we are liberal, we have done it. You stand condemned. Now, a number of things then arises from that answer of how do you condemn yourselves. Seems to me that the institutions that function in this country are clearly racist and that they're built upon racism. And the question then is, how can black people inside of this country move? And then how can white people who say they're not a part of those institutions begin to move? And how then do we begin to clear away the obstacles that we have in this society that make us live like human beings? How can we begin to build institutions that will allow people to relate with each other as human beings? This country has never done that, especially around the country of white or black. Now, several people have been upset because we said that integration was irrelevant when initiated by blacks, and that in fact it was a subterfuge, an insidious subterfuge, for the maintenance of white supremacy. Now, we maintain that in the past 6 years or so, this country has been feeding us a thalidomide drug of integration, and that some Negroes have been walking down a dream street talking about sitting next to white people, and that that does not begin to solve the problem. That when we went to Mississippi, we did not go to sit next to Ross Barnett. We did not go to sit next to Jim Clark. We went to get them out of our way. And that people ought to understand that. That we were never fighting for the right to integrate. We were fighting against white supremacy. Now then, in order to understand white supremacy, we must dismiss the fallacious notion that white people can give anybody their freedom. No man can give anybody his freedom. A man is born free. You may enslave a man after he is born free. And that is, in fact, what this country does. It enslaves black people after they're born. So that the only act that white people can do is to stop denying black people their freedom. That is, they must stop denying freedom. They never give it to anyone. Now, we want to take that to its logical extension so that we could understand, then, what its relevancy would be in terms of new civil rights bills. I maintain that every civil rights bill in this country was passed for white people, not for black people. For example, I am black. I know that. I also know that while I am black, I am a human being. Therefore, I have the right to go into any public place. White people didn't know that. Every time I tried to go into a place, they stopped me. So some boys had to write a bill to tell that white man he's a human being. Don't stop him. That bill was for that white man, not for me. I knew it all the time. I knew that I could vote, and that wasn't a privilege, it was my right. Every time I tried, I was shot, killed, or jailed, beaten, or economically deprived. So somebody had to write a bill for white people to tell them, when a black man comes to vote, don't bother him. That bill, again, was for white people, not for black people. So that when you talk about open occupancy, I know I can live any place I want to live. It is white people across this country who are incapable of allowing me to live where I want to live. You need a civil rights bill, not me. I know I can live where I want to live. So that the failure to pass a civil rights bill isn't because of black power, isn't because of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, is not because of the rebellions that are occurring in the major cities. It is incapability of whites to deal with their own problems inside their own communities. That is the problem of the failure of the civil rights bill. And so in a larger sense, we must then ask, how is it that black people move? And what do we do? But the question in a greater sense is, how can white people, who are the majority and who are responsible for making democracy work, make it work? They have miserably failed to this point. They have never made democracy work, be it inside the United States, Vietnam, South Africa, the Philippines, South America, Puerto Rico, wherever America has been. She has not been able to make democracy work. So that in a larger sense, we not only condemn the country for what is done internally, but we must condemn it for what it does externally. We see this country trying to rule the world, and someone must stand up and start articulating that this country is not God and cannot rule the world.
Wow, that's some scary stuff, isn't it? I mean, that's blame America for, that's I'm a victim stuff. Michelle Obama, she better not come out and be saying anything like that now. Had she? She better not come out and say that racism was a function of white failings and not black ones. Oh no, better not. No, cause then she'll be an albatross around Barack's neck. Phew. Horse's ass. I don't know. Maybe not horse's ass of the night. Horse's ass of the year. I mean, this is a heck of a way to start 2009. Who is the demographic? Okay, stupid rhetorical question. Best answered by horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner in The Fox Syndrome, Shared Psychotic Disorder. Is the demographic of the Fox News Channel so easily terrified, so benightedly ignorant, so unutterably racist that the mere mention of
a black intellectual from 40 years ago is sufficient to send them into quivering fits of fear and terror? Oh, Emory, I tell you what, I sure hope that Michelle Obama, she's so pretty, she looks like she loves her little girl. I hope she don't start acting like Stokely Carmichael. How? Now there, Eileen, you just take it and go get one of your pills. On the one hand, we look up and we say, you know, these people are idiots. And it's almost funny to watch them in their hissies. But then I find out that we're apologizing to them. Then I find out that because they've raised such a ruckus about something as prosaic as a birth control pill, that we have thrown our hands up in unmitigated despair and said, "It's all right, don't hurt us, please! We'll tell you, we won't let the poor women have no birth control. Jesus, don't hit us again." That, I don't know about you, but dang. I need some hardcore liberalism here, where you stand up and you bump chest with that POS John Boner. And you say, "Listen, you ass, if you can get the votes to stop this, do it. And tomorrow we'll talk about another 20,000 jobs gone. And we'll say, hey, America, ask John Boner." And 2 days later, when there's another 30,000 jobs gone, we'll say, hey, America, ask John Boner. He stopped this because he didn't want no women's having no birth control. And every time America asks, "What's happening to this country, John?" we'll refer them to you, and you can tell them that you let America keep suffering because you bow and scrape and kowtow and lick spittle to the hardest, weirdest core of the evangelical right wing and their silent abortions and their birth control pills. I guess that's just far too incivil for our well-heeled representatives. I mean, we got to be better than them, right? I mean, we can't be mean like the Republicans were. I mean, we can't be a little bit rude in the name of actually taking care of this floundering country. We can't do that now, can we? I mean, civility is more important than actually riding a ship that is hearing the combers off to port, that is fast approaching the sharp and nasty rocks that lurk beneath the foam. Mother McCree. Kind of tough to stomach, isn't it? So, that's a little bit frustrating. And it's been a frustrating evening. Been kind of a sad evening thinking about Mr. Schur, the Lupo family, women all across this country that have been sold. Dig yourselves. God, I love that line. So let's end the program tonight with at least something approaching a giggle. Last night we had an earworm problem in the form of what was engendered by those babbling wingnuts talking about George Bush being a knowing lion. I wish I could sing this, but I can't.
Our buddy Scott in Sweden already took a run at the parody. I don't know how we'll get the background vocals together, but John could. The background bass voices. You pay to play. You pay to play. You pay to play. You pay to play. In the nation, in ruination, the lion stalks tonight. Once proud nation in degradation, the lion stalks tonight. We, oh, we'll get away, we, oh, we'll get away, da-dum-ba-doo. Near the treasury, the empty treasury, the lion stalks tonight. Live in luxury, made through huckstery, the lion stalks tonight. Hush, my people, don't speak up, people, the lion stalks tonight. We took the heeple, it's what we reapled, the lion stalks tonight. Brilliant stuff, Scott. But Scott wasn't done for the day. Scott also heard me talking a little bit about those heroes who deserve the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Sent me pictures, one of the Eastern Empire version and one of the Western Empire version. Kamratsky, all hail the heroes of the CCCP, Capitalistic Creationist Christianist Party of America. Our glorious modern defenders of the People's Republic of 1776, through their devoted application of Chinese torture, harsh interrogation manual of 1951, are most deserving of our nation's highest honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Our brave young men and women, interrogators, have defended our nation through a virtual Stalingrad of deprivations. There were days when their air conditioners' thermostats were poorly set, their prisoners' blood splashed on their freshly laundered uniforms. They had to miss Fox's 24 by working evenings. The Barney the Dinosaur song wouldn't get out of the head. Their prisoners had foul breath. They were served styrofoam turkey. Charles Granger's dog was in heat. Yet through it all, they performed the amazing feat of physically extracting the most fiendish of terrorist plots out of taxicab drivers, students, out-of-towners, and other miscreants who had strayed into warlord territory in October through December of 2001 in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Our brave Kamratskis have proven beyond a shadow of doubt how evil is the Muslim culture. No matter how prima facie, unlikely the suspect, every Muslim, when subjected to harsh interrogation and honey-glazed chicken or lemon-baked fish served with whole wheat pita, various vegetables, and fruit, knew of multiple evil plots. And the harsher the interrogation, the more devious the plot unveiled. This proves the technique's work. So sign on to our holy crusade to force that uppity President Barack Hussein Obama to grant every interrogator the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And since he didn't really say the oath right, help us restore the duly selected President Sarah Palin to her rightful place. Signed, Committee to Return America to the Pure, that's C-R-A-P, William Crystal, General Secretary of the CCCP of America. Scott notes, as the steadfast lion himself says, we must propagate the crapaganda. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for helping out at the end, buddy. So thanks, everybody, for joining in tonight. Thanks for your comments, your emails, your participation in the chat room. I just had a computer crash, and I got tossed out of the chat room, but thanks, everybody. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk, who literally single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet with whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, the musical director and webmaster, busily designing the new headonradionetwork.com website, which I've seen and looks really cool. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They're upstream fighting because they know that we're all downstream and downwind. Thanks. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the first week of the Obama administration. And this president has hit the ground running. Already, on his first day, he stopped the practice of allowing torture. The torture that existed, that we conducted from September 11th, 2001 to January 20th, 2009. He made steps to close Guantanamo Bay on his first day in office. He met with his generals to devise a plan to get us out of Iraq in 16 months, as he promised. The world is hopeful and looking forward to this new man. Even Al-Qaeda appears to be flummoxed. They don't know how to deal with a person who has such worldwide support. He sent an envoy off to the Middle East. He called America's allies, leaders all around the world, to let them know that he was in charge. Here at home, 82% of Americans support the current new president. This is pretty astonishing. We've already had an election where Barack Obama won more votes than any Democratic candidate in 44 years. And Congress did even better. The Democrats beat the Republicans in the House of Representatives when you add up all the votes by more than a 10-point margin. America is ready for change. How will this new president do? How has he done in his first week of office? 1 week down, 408 to go. Well, he is putting out a stimulus package. As detailed in the Washington Post, show it right here, this is Sunday's Post, the Obama recovery plan has a large number of different factors. We can show some of right here on the screen, on the internet. But as I read it, the stimulus proposal, $820 billion, designed to create 4 million jobs with a spending timeline of 18 months. Maybe we can show the clip, if we could. This is the recovery plan, and the Washington Post lays it out in detail. You have everything from energy to health care to education to infrastructure. All of that in the new plan. Let's talk about some of that plan. We've got energy, doubling renewable energy generating capacity, building more than 3,000 miles of new or modernized electric transmission lines, weatherizing homes, guaranteeing health care for 8.5 million Americans who lose their jobs, increasing federal assistance to protect 20 million people at risk of losing Medicaid eligibility, computerize all Americans' health records within 5 years, renovate and education 10,000 public schools, tax cuts to make college more affordable, doubling the size of the Head Start program, infrastructure, it's not just bridges, it's enhancing security at 90 major ports, 1,300 wastewater projects, 380 drinking water projects, repairing and modernizing thousands of miles of roadways. For Republicans, you've got tax cuts, not just the tax cuts he promised, of $1,000 for 95% of working families that he promised in the campaign. He appears to be delaying the end of the Bush tax cuts until the recession is over, extending the child tax credits to parents of 6 million more children, increasing food stamp benefits to more than 30 million, even allowing businesses to take their capital losses now instead of waiting until they have profits over the last 5 years. This is something which few Americans can oppose. 82%, as I said, have supported it. Who can oppose an agenda to get us out of recession, build jobs, build infrastructure? You'd have to be quite a curmudgeon. Well, I've got a curmudgeon sitting right over here.